It won't work that way. Mm-hmm. And they still possess all the damn resources mm-hmm. of our people. That's absolutely unacceptable. And also, I just wanted to comment because I've been seeing and hearing these discussions about the death of Nelson Mandela, mm-hmm. who was the moral template for South Africa, and what's going to happen now that you've got a Zuma who is in power, who is corrupt, and et cetera, et cetera. And there's not a dime's worth of difference in Mandela and Zuma, mm-hmm. Except more. One may be more eloquent than the other. One may speak better and more persuasively to white people than the other. But the fact is that both of them contributed to maintaining the stranglehold of the imperialists on our land and on our people. And that is something that cannot be accepted, nor can it be forgiven. It can't be forgiven for Zuma, who is still alive, and it can't be mm-hmm. forgiven for Mandela, even as he is dead, mm-hmm. Despite the mourning and unhappiness that his death right now has caused for many of our people in occupied Azania or South Africa and other places around the world.
Mm. Yeah. I just want to, unite with the Chairman Amari and, everything he's saying there to bring clarity so that we can sum up together properly, what's going on. And one thing I would like to say, moving from the question of immigration to the question of African nation, because people have to remember that the labor that builds what they call the wealth of South Africa today, it was the workers coming not just from South Africa, they're coming from Zimbabwe, coming from Mozambique, coming from Malawi, coming from Angola. It was African workers. Yeah. And that's really important because the African political bourgeoisie in the trade unions, in the ANC, inside of the Communist Party, all that, they have maintained this illusion or this lie that you have the workers from South Africa and the others. And the others, like from Zimbabwe, Malawi, going to South Africa to snatch their jobs of the local people. They don't say the imperialists coming to South Africa to snatch our wealth, snatch our future, snatch our jobs. Yeah. Nothing. There is no white people on the street of South Africa chasing the French, chasing the British, chasing the Dutch. But you have Africans from this part of Africa chasing, hunting down those ones. This has to stop. This has to stop. And we have to recognize we are all part of the African nation, and Africa has to be free, the African nation has to be united, and the workers in South Africa have to play their role because it's expected from you, and the Africa needs the work in South Africa to sum up this situation by joining the African Socialist International, because it's Africa time, it's workers' time. You, the workers in South Africa, it's your time. It's time to stand up for what will build the African nation. Join the African Socialist International. So that's what I would like to say. In final, and say thank you to WHO Radio and to Dayden Kemafi for inviting me in this year, and the Chairman of Mali also for being with us.
Dayden Sankara, but it's all right. Dayden Kemati was my man too.
Okay.
That's who gave us Uhuru.
Yes,
Dayden
yes.
Kemati. But I just wanted to agree with you everything that you've said, and I hope this discussion is helpful to some extent, because right now there's a lot of I've seen interviews with Africans in occupied Azania, and I've seen how mournful and tearful they are. And these are working people who've been misled, and it's almost like a time when a child finds out that there is no Santa Claus in a place like, this country. And it can be heartbreaking, heartrending, but there's nothing better than truth. And we have to say this truth. And we have, this is not a new thing for us. We've worked to expose the ANC and Nelson Mandela since the 1970s and 80s. We were cursed and denounced by all kinds of so-called militants and some liberals and revolutionaries. How can we say that? This man, he's been in jail for so long. Well, if there are any of you out there who really just need to have an opportunity to stand up for a freedom fighter who's been in prison for a long time. I can point to many. I can point to Sundiata Okoli right here from the Black Liberation Army. I can point to so many African people. I can point to those others whom Mandela left rotting in prison even when he had the power to do something to get all of them out. I am not a romanticist when it comes to this. There's no sentiment that can help to cloud my consciousness. The point is that our people have to be free, and that Nelson Mandela was a tool of our oppressors. He worked with our oppressors while in prison, once he got out of prison, and the African National Congress is such a tool as well. And the fact is that they represent a different class interest than the majority of African people in occupied Zania or so-called South Africa. And, you know, brother made a song. I'm glad you raised that. What was it, the steam train Masekela, Hugh Masekela made a song talking about workers coming from everywhere throughout to work in the mines and what have you to build the economy of white power in South Africa. And for these buffoons strutting across the world stage pretending to be leaders, people like Zuma and people like Nelson Mandela, who was flattered by the presence of white people, people like this, you know, we have to recognize that they represent a different class interest than the vast majority of our people, and that it's not just some innocent mistake that they're making. It's not just because they are ignorant, and they are ignorant, but it's because they have a stake in the existing social system. What the imperialists have done, what white power has done, rather than end imperialism, they just let a few of us in on it, give us a piece of the action, and to make us someone who would function in their interest against the vast majority of our people. Mandela did that. Tutu does that. Zuma does that. And you don't even have a youth wing of the ANC. And I'm talking about people like Malema, because he's not like Sobukwe, who broke from them and created an organization, a real revolutionary organization. So it's good talking to you, Comrade Luwesi, and hopefully this little discussion that we are having can have, you know, some significance. I'm not sure how many people are able to hear us at this time of morning, but the fact is that yesterday, when this will have been heard on Sunday, and on Saturday, we're having a banquet and a freedom ball, and at that freedom ball, we shall dance on the grave of imperialism. And which is the state that imperialism is in, a state, an irreversible state of decay and decline. And so on, forward with the revolution. Uhuru.
Uhuru.
Yes, Uhuru.
Thank you. As the imperialists and the ruling class media run long, never-ending soliloquies on the death of Nelson Mandela and occupied Zania without referencing the maintenance of the apartheid economic system, which produces the same unending and ever-increasing immiserization of Africans in Zania throughout Africa and the rest of the world, Uhuru Radio comes forward with the worldview of African internationalism. This is a special discussion that is occurring the day before the 6th Congress of the African People's Socialist Party in St. Petersburg, Florida, December 7th through 11th, 2013. African Socialist International Secretary General Luwesi Kinshasa and Chairman Omalu Yeshitela, thank you for joining us today, live in the studios in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Yes, Uhuru.
Uhuru.
You've been listening to Africa Live with a very special broadcast of this moment in history. Uhuru.
That comes from Namibia and Malawi. There's a train that comes from Zambia and Zimbabwe. There's a train that comes from Angola and Mozambique, from Lesotho, from Botswana, from Swaziland, from all the hinterlands of southern and central Africa. This train carries young and old African men who are conscripted to come and work on contract in the gold and mineral mines of Johannesburg and its surrounding metropoli. 16 hours or more a day for almost no pay. Deep, deep, deep down in the belly of the earth, when they are digging and drilling for that shiny, mighty, evasive stone, or when they dish that mishmash mush food into their iron plates with the iron shovel, or when they sit in their stinky, funky, filthy, flea-ridden barracks and hostels, they think about the loved ones they may never see again because they might already have been forcibly removed from where they last left them, or wantonly murdered in the dead of night by roving and marauding gangs of no particular origin. We are told they think about their lands and their herds that were taken away from them with the gun and the bomb and the tear gas and the Gatling and the cannon. And when they hear that choo-choo train, a chugging and a pumping and a smoking and a pushing and a pumping, crying and a steaming and a chicken and a wah, wah! They always cuss and they curse the coal train, the coal train that brought them to Johannesburg.
Thank you.
sihamba ngamalahle siveleta la kubayi sangela hlawa kuqa hey babe what is this ubamalahle so Stimela Si hamanga malate Si nana tala kupa Helele sangina tawa kuta Hey babe, what is it Umpa malate Stimela, Jesus, sitting in the sea, that's the end of the Let me go,
This is Africa Live. You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
whereas before they couldn't do that because the South African regime was hated, you know, and by the masses of African, even if there were separate individual Negro countries, presidents and things like that, who would deal with them, they couldn't do it in public because the masses of African people hated the regime so much. So now, with the ANC becoming the black administrators of this white political economy, the corporations are free to go all over Africa, and they're moving all over Africa in a very serious way, just like any other imperialist power. And I think it's really important, Kermit Luwese, for us to say that we're not having this discussion about the situation in South Africa as some kind of armchair revolutionaries, that we participated in various ways with that struggle in South Africa. I mean, there were people who in our party who came from, at one juncture, they retired to the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania. We participated at the United Nations. We had demonstrations. We spoke for them. We published their materials. The Pan-Africanist Congress, when they were in exile here, we met with their leaders trying to bring them into the African Socialist International. So we had an ongoing kind of, and we participated in the debates when this whole struggle was coming down on whether or not they should accept this negotiated settlement, whether the Pan-Africanist Congress should sign on to this. You know, our party, we were in the middle of those debates, struggling against it and what have you. So it was a real relationship. And I think that that was what African internationalism required. It required that of us, and I think that it is absolutely true that our people need to recognize that, because you've heard it said, how can a handful of white people dominate all of those Africans? Well, it wasn't a handful of white people. It was the entire white world that was supporting that regime that dominated, and unfortunately, they didn't have to fight all of Africa. They just had to fight that particular sector of the African population. But, you know, I think it's really telling that, first of all, the Israelis got the uranium and what have you that they needed to create their atomic weapons, right? The Jewish white nationalist settler state of Israel got the uranium that they needed to create atomic weapons from the apartheid regime of South Africa. Then they helped the South African apartheid regime create nuclear weapons in South Africa, okay? But then when the so-called regime apartheid was over, a condition for the Negroes going to power, they had to do what? Give up the nuclear weapons. So even though they were they were good Negroes, they weren't trusted to the extent that they could be trusted with those weapons. Of course, the reason they can't be trusted with the weapons is not because they were ever going to betray their white masters. It's because at some juncture, the masses of African people, working people in South Africa are going to rise up. And are going to take back our future that's now currently in the possession of the imperialists through their intermediaries in the form of the African National Congress and Nelson Mandela's heirs.
Definitely. This just reminds me of the meeting we had when we participated in Congress, the historical Congress of the PAC, Pan-Africanist Congress, in 2002.
The eighth Congress there.
And when one of the white journalists asked you, you know, he asked the chairman already what chairman is doing in South Africa. And the chairman, when he was reporting about it in a meeting with 2,000 people listening, you know, in South Africa, chairman said on a reflection, he would have asked him, what was he doing there?
What's the white guy doing there? What do you mean, what am I doing here? This is home. I'm home. What are you doing here?
That was something.
Yeah.
Because this reminds us on the question of the immigration. Immigration, you know, is one of the areas definitely that exposes the opportunistic, self-serving, sellout regime of ANC in South Africa. You have all these African police or soldiers patrolling alongside the white settlers and looking for immigrants. They're not looking for whites. They're looking for Africans. And on the television, watching that, that's unbelievable, with all these German dogs.
The white guys running around looking for immigrants. Looking for Africans who are immigrants, illegal immigrants. But I think it's also worth mentioning, Comrade Luwese, that for the longest period of time, the Pan-African, the African National Congress was really the mass organization of the Communist Party of the Communist Party of South Africa. Definitely. The Communist Party of South Africa is the organization that at one time in its history put forth a slogan, mm-hmm. workers unite yep. to keep white, keep South Africa white.
Wow.
You understand? And wow. And Joe Slovo is said to be the author. He was the guy who was head of the Communist Party of South Africa for a long period of time, mm-hmm. of the so-called Freedom Charter that turned mm-hmm. over South Africa to all who lived there, you know, mm-hmm. black and white together. And I think that here you have this interesting situation where they used to talk about the government of South Africa containing what these three legs of a stool: that's the Communist Party, the yeah. COSATU, the workers' organization,
the tripartite,
and the African National Congress. Yeah. And here you have an entity that's supposed to be a communist organization yeah. that's in the government. Mm-hmm. That's a part of this tripartite relationship mm-hmm. that is apologizing for a government that's shooting down workers mm-hmm. at the mines. And the biggest contradiction that the African National Congress talks about existing and all of the media in South Africa is crime. Mm-hmm. And the criminals are mm-hmm. the African people who assume that the end of apartheid would result in some material benefits for the work.
A nation of genuinely free women and men, finally in charge of our own affairs and our own future. We must build a party throughout the Caribbean region. A party must enhance the ability to build a party throughout the world. The ASI is the organizational expression of our commitment to this task, one that every member of the party in every country on every continent must accept as her responsibility. Our post-Fifth Congress work with the One Party, One Destiny campaign, One People, One Party, One Destiny campaign, led directly under the leadership of my office through the ad hoc committee that represents centralist leadership through the main organizational principle of democratic centralism, was designed to provide razor-sharp attention and leadership to building real organizational capacity. Our six-party Congress must clearly define the road that we must pursue to advance our revolution into the future of liberation, unity, and socialism. All of our work subsequent to our fifth Congress has been designed to move us forward, and we will have to continue the trajectory established at that historic Congress. The party's work since the fifth Congress has revolved around organizational capacity building and recruitment. One purpose of the One People, One Party, One Destiny campaign that has led most of our activities since then is to hold us to the mandates and protocols developed to carry out these tasks. We should never again hold our Congress and other major meetings designed to give direction to our party and struggle without a guarantee that they will be reviewed and pursued until completion or until we have made a decision to move otherwise. The resolutions and mandates from our Congress are our bulwarks against spontaneity and opportunism. They are among the factors that distinguish our party and contribute to the continuity that we think so important. Our success in this work will be revealed in this political report and the reports provided by others of our leaders who are mandated to do so by our Constitution. This is the manner in which our leadership is held accountable by our party members and by the masses of oppressed Africans and others as well. Some of the agenda of our party going into our fifth Congress can be found in the political report to our fifth Congress. In that report, we outlined issues I thought the party must address if we are to be successful in recruiting into the party and forwarding the African Revolution. And the complex nature of these questions is such that they will be on our agenda for our sixth Congress and for many more Congresses to come. And the questions revolve around the issues of organizing African students, labor, the imprisoned, and women. And I'm skipping a bit here and going to, because here I'm simply repeating, reporting much of what was determined in our fifth Congress. But we say that these are among the important issues raised by our political report, and I'm on page 252. Once again, recruit. These are among the important issues raised by our political report or main resolution at the party's fifth Congress. They are issues that continue to demand attention for our sixth Congress. The International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, All African People's Development and Empowerment Project, Black Star Industries, and the various economic-related institutions under the leadership of the Office of Economic Development and Finance are among the examples of the party's progress in building a real revolutionary capacity. And although they are not without contradiction, they represent concrete, material manifestations of the party's theory. The same can be said of the African People's Solidarity Committee and the general strides made in building a solidarity movement under the leadership of the party and the African Revolution. In addition to this front of our work, opening another door for entry into the ranks of our party organization, the solidarity work is also a manifestation of African internationalism at work. It is a clear example of a theory that works in the real world. This is work which, along with the Black is Back Coalition and We Are Patrice Lumumba Coalition, helps the party to provide leadership for masses of Africans at a time when revolutionary leadership is most critical. It helps to provide reserve forces for the party and revolution, training grounds for recruiting and developing new members to forward our revolution. We must make every effort to grow our ability to provide the necessary leadership and training for the cadre responsible for leading this crucial work. This is fundamental to all our recruiting efforts. This is something that must influence our party-building work coming out of the Sixth Congress. This continues the understanding that influenced the party's decision to build the One People, One Party, One Destiny campaign. The party's Congress is not an event. It is a place where we lay out our understanding of the world, our place in it, and what it will take to build a future of a free, united Africa and African people. The resolutions from the Congress are designed to forge the way forward. However, for the resolutions to be meaningful, they must be followed through and carried out. The work to organize a student wing of the party through building AISO, the significance of concentrating on the African labor front, to organize the millions or more African prisoners behind the million or more African prisoners behind bars on any given day, and to bring African women fully into revolutionary political organization, to bring individuals into our ranks. One of the fundamental issues of our Congress was determined to confront is the issue of recruitment. The defeat of the Black Revolution of the 1960s nearly depleted the ranks of our struggle of revolutionaries and undermined mass consciousness of the need for revolution and revolutionary organization. The party is the only surviving revolutionary organization that has even understood that our revolution was defeated and requires rebuilding. This is why our Fifth Congress placed such a value on party recruitment as a critical component of forwarding the revolution. Toward this end, we changed the structure of the party leadership to create an office that is dedicated to the issue of recruitment, followed by the post-Congress One People, One Party, One Destiny campaign that established protocols and a number of tools to promote recruitment and hold the process accountable to the office of the chair. Since the Fifth Congress and establishment of the One People, One Party, One Destiny campaign, the party has struggled to push the newly created recruitment office to develop and implement a serious recruitment campaign. And I'm convinced that the reason for our inadequacy in developing this serious recruitment campaign is the fact that the basic features of the campaign were being ignored or underestimated. Plans to build the African International Student Organization, the student wing of the party, would give us as a mass recruitment target the thousands of African students whose primary activity revolves around intellectual activity, and who, as a group, are no longer able to imagine a successful future within the imperialist status quo. Unlike the relatively recent past, when students were able to assume personal success through ascending into the corporate ranks of the oppressor nation bourgeoisie, today's students are faced with a bleak future and are more susceptible to our revolutionary message that connects their future and success with the future and success of our liberated dispersed nation under the leadership of the African working class, the only class capable of fighting and carrying the struggle to its revolutionary conclusion. Our six-party Congress must mandate a recruitment plan of action that first of all concentrates on building and developing existing fronts of our party. This includes APSC, NPDOM, APDEP, BSI, and the host of related economic components of the party. Our cadre development work must involve ideological and organizational training for carrying out the work in these areas and becoming more proficient in using them as platforms through which we recruit growing numbers into the party and party-led organizations. We must develop a greater political and ideological appreciation for our work with the Black is Back Coalition and its European-based expression, the We Are Patrice Lumumba Coalition. Our coalition work provides the party the necessary organizational tool to extend the party's influence within various mass movements and allows us opportunities to help them with the correct line around the pressing issues of our times. This is especially true of questions revolving around issues of war and peace. These questions are usually dominated by white leftists and presented in opposition to various imperialist policies instead of opposition to imperialism itself. This makes most of their work something that can be characterized as loyal opposition to specific wars without recognizing that all imperialist wars are unjust and characteristic of imperialism as a parasitic system. Also, the white left is never able to describe the attack on Africans, Mexicans, and so-called Indians indigenous to the U.S. As the colonial wars that they are. Their politics usually assume legitimacy of the colonial relationship enjoyed by those who are colonized within the borders of the United States, even if they think there are aspects of oppression and or injustice associated with the relationship. Our coalition work also affords the party our most consistent recent arena of recruitment. This is another reason the party must develop a plan of action to place this work more efficient, to make this work more efficient and effective. And party members must be provided the ideological, political, and organizational skills to do coalition work. Obviously, I am laying out a general plan for recruitment that has been overlooked or neglected since our fifth Congress. This is the material that our recruitment office must use as the basis of any recruitment strategy. When added to the development of our student, prison, labor, and women's work, we have a comprehensive strategy for recruitment that also keeps our party constantly involved in leading around all the pressing issues of our times. This is a recruitment strategy that is tied to revolutionary practice. African internationalist party building is directly connected to forwarding the revolutionary process. It is not building an organization simply for the sake of doing so. In summation, the significance of our party's commitment to advance the African revolution that will provide the strategic leadership for the emerging world revolution to overthrow an imperialism in crisis, our sixth Congress must continue party building as our strategic thrust. Immediately, this will mean developing the existing party committees, organizations, and institutions that now comprise the basic constituent components of our party. Namely, this includes APDEP, APSC, NPDOM, Black Star Industries, and the related economic expressions of the party's Office of Economic Development and Finance. For the most part, the structures, plans, and leadership are in place to develop and or implement this aspect of our party building work. We must simply continue to insist that this work is carried out as mandated and under the principles and protocols developed through the One People, One Party, One Destiny campaign, and that it employs the necessary strategies for developing the cadre for its success within each of the constituent organizations and committees. Secondly, we must organize a strategy to advance the areas of our work put forward in the Fifth Congress Political Report. This includes AISO, African labor work, prison organizing, and consolidation of the African Women's Commission, and development of the African National Women's Organization. This is basic party organizational work that must be reflected in the recruitment plan of action by our National Office of Recruitment and Membership. This will provide the coherence for that work that has been missing up to now. It will take the abstraction out of our recruitment, move us away from the elusive mission of organizing the masses in general, and give us actual definable targets for recruitment and the ability to build plans for carrying out the work with specific timetables according to a specific recruitment agenda. Our basic organizational training mission should be geared toward building the organizational, political, and ideological capacity of our members and organizations to realize this end. Most of our work since the party's 5th Congress has concentrated on organizational and political development, while the ideological development has lagged. We must fix this. The party must become an organization of propagandists with the primary mission of spreading the theory of African internationalism. This means that we must equip the members of our party for this task. We recognize the absolute necessity to change the political narrative. The current narrative relies on an imperialist or imperialist-influenced European-based worldview that is incapable of defining reality from a materialist perspective. African internationalism represents the participation of the peoples of the earth, made wretched by becoming the primitive accumulation upon which the foundation of the prevailing social system and its ideological manifestations depend. This political report to our 6th Congress is central to this work. All our party organizations must initiate study and internalization of this political report by all party and movement members. While our pre-Congress work provides at least 3 months for study and discussion of this report, we must continue the process of studying this document for the ensuing period of work. Our members must be transformed into enthusiastic African internationalist evangelists who recognize that the promised land of African liberation and unification can only be entered when we have gained supremacy in the ideological struggle with imperialism and its representatives. The entire party, our entire movement, and all our members must be made aware of the task history has imposed on our party and the Africans and poor peasants of the world. Stated simply, our task is to build the African People's Socialist Party, the revolutionary organization of the advanced detachment of the international African working class. Our party is the general staff of the African working class, is the only instrument capable of leading the international African revolution to victory over imperialism and the elevation of the African working class to the position of the ruling class in a liberated socialist Africa and African world. While we will engage imperialism and struggle on every front and in every area of the world around a myriad of issues that will sometimes include struggles for reform, and although the various committees and organizations under the influence and leadership of the party will continue to organize to accomplish their specific missions, the strategic work of the party will continue to be directed at building the party as a strong and accomplished instrument necessary to win the socialist liberation and unification of Africa and the dispersed African nation. Comrades, the process of preparing this political report to our 6th Congress was complicated by the blistering pace of changing events that characterized this era of the final offensive against imperialism. Every day, there is new evidence of crisis. Fortunately, the party's constitutionally mandated 3 months period for study and criticism of this political report requires me to end it and turn it over to you. Undoubtedly, there will be major crisis-related changes occurring in the world by the time of our 6th Congress. The parasitic world capitalist economy is being uprooted by the formerly prostrate and subjugated mass of humanity. Social upheaval is naturally following in the wake of the fissures in the economic base of slavery and colonialism, threatening all existing ideas and institutions. Everything of the past that was assumed to be true is being called into question by the unfolding events of history. But we are not afraid. This Congress of our party will function to locate the African People's Socialist Party in our proper role as facilitators of history. We are the harbingers of human progress that will result in the end of misery for the world's majority and the destruction of a social system that relies on exploitation and suffering for its success. This Congress will serve to arm every single member of our party with the theory, confidence, and organization to reclaim our history, our dignity, and our Africa. We are not afraid. We will win. We are winning. Uhuru.
Trigger happy, police it. Everybody thinks we're on the mother. Who are they to judge us?
Mother, mother.
Simply call us, we wear our hair long.
Mother, mother.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
This is Africa Live.
Information, ideas, reality. That's what the Burning Spear newspaper offers you each month. Truth about government, society, entertainment, and the world around you. The Burning Spear is the oldest Black Power newspaper in existence, and your one-year subscription is only $25. Get the insight and perspective that the mass media machine cannot and will not deliver. Read dynamic articles on the most pressing issues affecting the lives of African workers in the U.S., Africa, and around the world. Each month, you'll find real political analysis of the crisis of parasitic capitalism, insight into world and local events, and a focus on the realities and struggles in the heart of the hood, expressing the vision and voice of the African working class. Uncompromising truth, unwavering focus. The Burning Spear newspaper. This is Black Power in the 21st century. Subscribe today and don't get fooled again. Order your subscription now. Go to burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. That's burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. Uhuru.
Uhuru. Welcome to Africa Live on the Uhuru Network.
Up next on Africa Live is a dialogue between African Socialist International Secretary General Loizi Kinshasa and African Socialist International Chairman Omala Yeshitela. They're speaking on the death of Nelson Mandela and the future of South Africa. This special dialogue was recorded on December 6th, the day after the death of Nelson Mandela in South Africa. It's rare that the chairman and Loizi are both in the studio at the same time, but in this case, Secretary General Loizi Kinshasa had traveled to St. Petersburg, Florida, for the 6th Congress for the African People's Socialist Party. Let's listen in.
Welcome to Africa Live on the Uhuru Radio Network. Africa Live is a weekly show that brings you the best in news and analysis from the African internationalist perspective. I'm your host, Dedan Sankara. Yesterday, Nelson Mandela died. This is a special broadcast of this moment in history. It's featuring a dialogue between Secretary General of the African Socialist International, Loizi Kinshasa, and Chairman Omala Yeshitela of the African Socialist International. Uhuru.
Uhuru, Comrade Dedan, thank you for inviting me in this program. It's an honor, as usual, to be in this studio.
Thank you, Comrade Loizi. Uhuru, Chairman.
Uhuru. I think it's really important that we should have this discussion on today. With the passing of Nelson Mandela, there is a whole myth that surrounds Mandela, having characterized him as this great leader, the moral authority of Africa, of African resistance and what have you. There's a complete revision of history when it comes to dealing with him, summing up his significant, and there is a real need by the ruling class of the imperialist ruling class, the white power, and his minions, Negro minions in South Africa and around the world, to raise this whole sense of emotionalism and sentimentality around Nelson Mandela without doing a real examination of who this man was. what his role was in the struggle for the liberation of our people in Africa and the liberation of our people in Occupied Zania, commonly called South Africa. So I think it's really important, and I'm glad that to have this opportunity to have this discussion with comrade, brother, Secretary General Luwesi.
Yes, well, it's great, you know, as usual, to be in the seat of the chairman, you know. So I'm looking forward, just like you listening to what the chairman has said. We still remember when Nelson Mandela came out of the prison, and it was an opportunity, but it was not an opportunity for everybody. We remember the bourgeois press, the white imperialist press around the world, you know, told us it's a new era, it's a new dawn. You know, it was just such a big event at the time. But we can see after so many years that it was an event, it was an opportunity for the white settlers to save their properties, the control over the land, but it also was an opportunity for the new class of the African petit bourgeoisie inside the ANC to access wealth, power, and things like that. That was in 1994, you know, when Nelson Mandela and the ANC won the elections. It was an opportunity. Now we can see 20 years almost later that we face death. We can also say it's an opportunity for somebody. And we're saying this time is likely to be an opportunity for the workers who have been waiting for 19 years to see change in their life. But for that to become a reality, as the chairman said, we're going to look into all the myths that have been created around the ANC and the leader at the time, Nelson Mandela. So what I'm trying to say is coming to power was an opportunity for the settlers, the white settlers, to defend, to maintain their properties. It also was an opportunity for the leaders in the ANC to access power and wealth. But now what we're trying to say is passing away, is death, is also an opportunity for the workers, the ordinary people, to begin to understand exactly what has gone on for 19 years, what was the ANC doing in power, what was Mandela really about, because the workers now have to sum up for themselves the death of Nelson Mandela, so we can go forward in the best way.
Yeah, and I think what really needs to be understood is that that is exactly what the party of the workers, the African People's Socialist Party, is engaged in doing right now. It is really important to state that the African People's Socialist Party was around at a time when the African National Congress and Nelson Mandela had to really struggle for the loyalty of the masses. They did not exist in some kind of political vacuum inside Occupied Zania or South Africa, as it's called. The reality is that there were other revolutionary organizations that existed at the time on the ground who had clearly different opinions, attitude, politic, and philosophy than the African National Congress. Chief among them was the Pan-Africanist Congress of Zania, who was led by an incredible man whose name was Robert Mangaliso Sobukwe. And he, like Nelson Mandela, had been a part of the youth wing of the African National Congress and broke with the African National Congress at the time the African National Congress put forth this thing that they call a Freedom Charter that declared that South Africa belonged to all who lived there, that included the white settlers who were oppressing and killing them and who had taken and dispossessed the people at gunpoint, as well as the African people. And this was something that was the last straw for many of the militants, especially young militants, who were members of the African National Congress. And so Bukwe was one of them that moved to create what was called the Pan-Africanist Congress of Zania. And I might say that Bukwe was someone who was highly influenced by Kwame Nkrumah. had attended the meeting in Ghana, I think, that was held in 1968 by Nkrumah once he had come to power there, and believed that the only way freedom could be won for African people, it had to happen within the context of a single united Africa. And so Bukwe was an incredible force, and for a long period of time, up until independence itself, both the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania and the African National Congress were recognized as the legitimate representatives of the oppressed and colonized people in what they now refer to as South Africa. I want to say that, Comrade Luezi, that I do think that it is important to state that one of the reasons that Nelson Mandela and the African National Congress came to be so well known by African people on the continent of Africa and around the world was because of the Soviet Union that had declared that there were only six authentic revolutionary organizations in all of Africa during the 1960s. And among the organizations was the African National Congress. And because of this assumption that it was one of the six legitimate representatives of African revolution, the Soviet Union and all of those forces tied to the Communist International at that time, they did training, they did military training, ideological training, organizational training, and what have you of the African National Congress. And they put them out before the world. Nelson Mandela is known was known because of the Communist International, as opposed to Robert Sobukwe, who was arrested and who terrorized the imperialists because they knew that the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania coming to power under his leadership would mean that African people would get our land back. So, and it was only after the crisis of imperialism that manifested itself a thousand different ways at the time that included the collapse of the Soviet Union, that included the growing resistance of the people on the ground in occupied Azania, even while most of the organizations had been banned from participating, Comrade Luezi, that it became necessary, critically important, to try and win control over masses of people, that they freed Nelson Mandela after having met with him, even behind the backs of the African National Congress. They were holding meetings. They were taking him out of his jail cell at night, driving him, you know, wherever he wanted to go. And this went on for a few years, but behind the back of the ANC. And so when they knew that they had exactly what they wanted with this guy, to the great dismay of many of the Dutch that call themselves Afrikaners, who were Boers. Up to that time, the Boers, they were the administrators of South African government, of South Africa, for the imperialists. To their dismay, they freed Nelson Mandela. They ended the apartheid regime. And then, of course, the first presentation that Nelson Mandela made after being released from prison was to the masses of thousands of ecstatic African people who had come out to see him was cast your weapons into the sea. Yep. And even as he was making this statement, the South African security forces literally were killing people who were in the crowd who were watching what was for them this momentous event of Nelson Mandela being released from prison. I just think that that kind of background is really important, Brother Luezi, and that if masses of people understood a bit better what that history was, that their perspective of who Nelson Mandela and the African National Congress really are would be different.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, Chairman O'Malley, for giving this background. I think that, that will help a lot of people definitely to understand it, because most, as you said in the reports, you know, we're dealing with almost two or three generations of African people who have not known struggle at all, and they don't have the benchmark to understand what is going on, and this definitely will help a lot. And one thing is really important, that just the significance of the masses, of the workers, because South Africa occupied Azania, as we refer to it, unlike most of the places inside the African continent, where you don't have a high concentration of workers. In South Africa, you do have a high concentration of workers who are skilled to build almost anything that the industrial modern world has to offer. Boats, planes, computers, all that. They can make it, there are skills there. So the significance in terms of production for the whole African nation is really important. So as South Africa be free from parasitic capitalism. And the masses of South Africa also are also important, because when we say that the regime of the settlers, the Boers, that was in place could not contain the people anymore. The system that in place was not tenable anymore. It's not because they discovered love or forgiveness and things like that, or they discovered an African who has the best love for white people. No, because they could not manage that system anymore. It has to go, you know, and because the workers were moving, the workers were being organized, being mobilized, began to develop their own power, and nobody wants to see Africans becoming conscious of their own power. In particular, the working class becoming aware of its power as a working class, that's a danger for the whole system. So they should not come to that position. And it became so important to make sure the mass movement, the struggle taking place in South Africa, remain in safer hands, what the ANC is, in terms of the struggle in South Africa. There are other things that people have been mystified to almost believe that the prisons are a place to build loving Africans. You know, put us in jail. When we come out of jail, we love you so much. That's how Nelson Mandela is portrayed. You know, he found forgiveness. He found love for the oppressors. You know, white people in South Africa are not just white people in general. Just like white people in the United States, you know, in America, they are not just white people in general. They are occupiers. People who stole the land. People shouldn't be there because the land is not theirs, and they are there at the expense of the indigenous people, and they're not innocent, you know, because they will criticize people who took up arms, for example, in South Africa for killing settlers, and they're saying innocent were killed. It's just like in Palestine, saying Palestinian killed innocent Israeli. They are occupiers, you know, they are settlers, you know, so, you know, this is just a mystification to confuse the people, and people need to know for us, basically, as we are in a time of changing, the world is changing, and all things are passing. So the death of Nelson Mandela has to be seriously examined. The workers have to seriously sum up what's going on in South Africa. We know one thing definitely: the poverty of the masses is higher now than it has ever been since the system of certain neocolonialism was put in place. We know we have not gotten our land back. The land is still in the hands of the oppressors. So to be free, or at least to say South Africa is a democratic place, it means you own the land. What's democracy? Democracy is not just you go and vote. It must have material content. And material content is the land in South Africa. That's the basis. I have no land. I'm not free. We are not free. African nation is no united. We are not free. The African revolution is not completed. We are not free. There are things we begin to talk about, you know, to have an appreciation of what we mean progress. Because I remember having a lot of discussion in England, for example, when they would say at least black people are in power. So it's not an advance. You know, it's a progress. But we go to sum it up. That is the African people who raised as a class that has achieved its aspirations, its progress for them. For us, the workers, the peasant, we have no advance, as all the statistics show that we're suffering more than ever. So we want to, you know, to look things, every class standing for itself. If you watch TV, you will see white people on the television about South Africa, the way they summed it up. They say they want us to maintain the spirit of forgiveness, which basically maintains status quo. No change. You know, we keep what we stole. You stay there with your poverty. Just be happy and smile, things like that. We say we don't want anything like that. So every class stand for itself. We are the African working class. And we say, how would you sum up the death of Nelson Mandela?
But I think concretely what that means also, when you look at the situation in South Africa now, we say that the struggle is over. The African people were engaged in this brilliant, magnificent struggle in South Africa. Now we've won our freedom. That's at least the way the narrative goes.
Yes,
okay, now, if we won,
yeah,
then how can you tell me, how can you explain to me that under Nelson Mandela and the African National Congress, the white people who constitute maybe 9% of the population still own 87% of the land.
Yes.
They own, still, and control a land mass that is four and a half times larger than England and Northern Ireland combined.
Yep.
If we won, then how is it that more than 40% of the African people are unemployed? And when I was there 4 or 5 years ago, the white ruling class put out information saying that African people in the 12 years since independence had actually regressed in terms of their conditions of existence, something like 14%, while the position and conditions of white people had grown something like 16-18%.
Yep.
What kind of victory is that?
Yep.
And this is under Nelson Mandela and the African National Congress, and I think it's really important to say that.
Yep.
What kind of freedom is it? Where everybody said, okay, you've got this horrible apartheid regime. That's how they wanted to make the form of the state the critical question, that it was apartheid. So everybody recognized that this was a horrible entity on the one hand. So the African National Congress goes to power, and yet all of the people who fought, all of the African people, they said that in South Africa there were only X numbers of political prisoners. How is it that everybody who was locked up under that regime, every African who went to prison under that regime should have been freed? Every one of them under that kind of regime. But, of course, that didn't happen.
No,
and not only did that not happen, there are people who are in prison right now in South Africa because they killed white people during the resistance. These were people who fought for freedom. And then what you have is them saying that they wouldn't participate in the truth and reconciliation thing that was set up by this Uncle Tom Negro Desmond Tutu that says that everybody's got to confess their wrong and ask for forgiveness.
Yep.
So somebody breaks into your house and steal everything you got, kill your family in the process of doing that. They have to ask for forgiveness for doing that. And you killing them for breaking in your house and trying to defend your family, you got to ask forgiveness for doing that too.
Yep.
And so there were people saying, no, I'm not asking for forgiveness for this.
Yep.
And they're still rotting in prisons right now in South Africa. And then what about Steve Biko? You don't hear anything about Biko. You don't hear anything about Sobukwe. You don't hear about anything. You got this noble Negro, the noble Negro. He's not angry with anybody. What about this guy who gets out of prison? He gets out of prison, then he has a replica of the very same house that he lived in prison, created to live in once he gets out of prison. This is who we're looking at. And so it's not just a matter of being angry because we have a different politic. It's a matter of the fact that this different politic represents itself concretely in the real world. And so the masses of African people, and I've been there, and I've been all over Occupied Azania or South Africa several different times, every section of it. And I've seen the people living in these shanty towns, and I've seen them living in the houses that Mandela and Mbeki and the rest of them are supposed to create for the masses. I mean, and they're they're toilets with toilets, you know, at best. I mean, I've seen the shanties. You know, people are living like hell, and the biggest problem they have in South Africa, I remember when they said, I think it was Mandela who said that the biggest problem we're confronted now is white fears and black expectations.
Yeah.
What the hell is this? White fear and black expectations. That's a problem because the masses of people who've suffered all this time expect. Of course, the thief should be afraid.
Yes.
If the one you've been stealing from all this time now has real freedom, you have a responsibility. You have to be afraid.
Definitely.
But the masses to expect something. And so the people don't get their land back.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get their resources back. They don't get anything back. And then they create this situation that they call the Black Economic Empowerment Project so that a handful of Negroes now are filthy rich. So you got people who are trade union organizers, COSATU, for example, who are billionaires. Mm-hmm. Who ever heard of a billionaire trade? Of course, you've heard of that. You know, these guys represent the work of billionaires. And even this youth Kamalema, you know, who is supposed to be the great leader, you know, riding around in Maserati or something like this, that this guy, a car that costs more than several houses, you know, that estates that Africans could own there. This is the African National Congress. Here's the African National Congress where Mandela, and people like to talk about this great speech that he made at the trial, where he says that all my life I fought against black oppression and white oppression. When in the hell did he live that he had to fight against black people oppressing somebody? I mean, but his statement to the white people at this time was, look, boss, I'm safe. Mm-hmm. It's not that I'm trying to raise up a black power that's going to overturn you, because I'm against black people oppressing white people, and I'm against white people oppressing black people. Yep. So Mandela hasn't changed. And you know, I sympathize. I feel so badly for all of those people who be crying tears of serious careers, copious tears for Mandela now, who don't understand who he was. And I'm really sorry that Mandela died. And the reason I'm sorry that he died was because it was premature in terms of people needing to know who he was before he died. And unfortunately, that happens to us all the time. That people who do terrible things, terrible, horrible things against us, they sometimes die of natural causes before they're exposed for who they are to the masses of our people. And this is not some unfounded bitterness that I have with Nelson Mandela. I'm just feel so badly. I've been there with the Mandela estate on the holidays, like a Christmas or something. He would open up his estate, the gates, and then they would feed all the hungry. Well, I mean, wow, how wonderful is that? He's opened his house to feed all the hungry when all the resources in South Africa belong to the masses of people there. This is the government that shoots down miners who are striking to take back our own resources just to get higher wages. I mean, they're not even trying to stop the thieves from taking the stuff just to get paid more for helping them take it. This is the government that does that. That's Nelson Mandela's government. That's the African National Congress that's doing that, and there's no way you can get around that. And I think fundamentally the question that you raised, the issue of class, the problem that we often have is that the African working class, unlike the petty bourgeoisie, is often not aware of its own selfish interests, and sometimes when it is aware of its own selfish interests, does not have the kind of organization to pursue those, the tactics and strategies to make that happen. And that's one of the things that I think makes this period so important, where the African Socialist International does exist. And our objective, of course, is to take this consciousness and organization to the African workers in South Africa and every place else, because we're going to have to be free, and it's going to take a revolution to do that. And as much as all the white power and all the white people, here you got a guy like Colin Powell, a murderer, fought against oppressed people in Vietnam, was willing to fight against any oppressed people anywhere in the world. Here you've got Barack Hussein Obama that is using drones and assassinating people who just want to be free throughout the Middle East and parts of Africa and other places. And they are talking about what a wonderful man, and they love him because he was so much for peace. And he was, and they believe in peace. Colin Powell believes in peace. Barack Hussein Obama believes in peace. And of course, what he was for was the maintenance of an imperialist relationship, of a parasitic relationship that white power has with Africa and African people everywhere. And Obama is also, and Colin Powell is also. I think that it might have been one of the leaders in Iran who characterized Colin Powell as a buffalo soldier. He quoted Malcolm X and said that Colin Powell was a house Negro. Negro. And I think that was pretty accurate.
It's definitely so true, you know, what the chairman is saying. And, you know, you mentioned the Black Economic Empowerment, the BEE. One of the guys, Ramaphosa, you know, is, because Ramaphosa now is the deputy president of the ANC.
Yeah.
So he's probably the next candidate to become the president. And he's a trade union leader who negotiated the surrender of the struggle he's one of the guys. He's not the only one who negotiated at the surrender of the struggle in South Africa to the imperialist. And also, he also has an interest, investment in Marikana, in the mines, where they killed at least 34 Africans. And this is a trade union leader, ANC leader, a billionaire, has investment in a company that shut down the African workers.
And denounced the workers. And they denounced the workers for demonstrating.
And they fabricated evidence to frame the workers to say, you brought this on yourself. You know, it's just unbelievable. So the ANC, just like the system they're defending, you know, the neo-colonial settler regime, is a criminal a regime as such. And Africans should be enraged that you know that anybody can forgive de Klerk, Botha, Verwoerd. In fact, Nelson Mandela had a tea, you know, unless it was a tea party, but he had a tea with the wife of the founder of the apartheid regime. Africans should be enraged about that because any people who want to be free will not accept that the leaders sit with the leaders of the oppressors having tea. The only negotiation is to get the oppressors to surrender. That's the only negotiation you have. You know, oppressors come on the table to say, we surrender, you know. But it's the other way around. So that's not acceptable. And when you think about it, for example, in the U.S. here, we have the freedom fighters. We have the leaders of the Panthers who are sitting in the jail. But the leaders of the apartheid regime, the settler regime, none of them went to jail. They're free. They enjoyed life to the full. And Africans should be enraged about that. And this question basically takes us to the question of the borders. South Africa is one of the places where the struggle should have allowed us to grasp the question of the nation. Because in South Africa, we're not just facing the settlers there. All along, the whole white nation united to support the settlers. You know, they armed them with atomic weapons. France cooperated with them, things like that. The United States was one of the countries that really prop up the apartheid regime. The Dutch support them, the Germans support them. The whole white nation supported the settlers in their criminal enterprise, which means that we were not fighting just the settlers. We were fighting the white imperialist parasitic nation, which means that South Africa should have an appeal. I mean, South Africa, I mean, the African Liberation Movement should have an appeal to the African nation too. And one of the things is, you know, free the political prisoners in South Africa, free them in the U.S., free them wherever they are. No, but they, of course, the petit bourgeoisie is an opportunist class, and they use the situation in South Africa to their own benefit, isolate the African nation so they can make their own deal. And this can be seen with the BRICS. If you look at the BRICS, you have Brazil, you go
Brazil, Russia,
Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. All these four countries, they're building relationship with Africa based on the same foundation of their, you know, slavery. Because slavery, the slavery of Africa and the enslavement of the African nation, which you see in Africa and you see in America, as you see in, as well, is the foundation of the modern parasitic economy we're dealing with. And the BRICS, they're not coming to destroy parasitic capitalism, but they're trying to build themselves on the same system.
Same foundation.
And South Africa is justifying that. Because South Africa is not China. It's not Brazil. It's not India. It's not world power. And this is the ANC. Because the ANC, if they are, if the ANC was in an organization of African revolution or liberation, they will be building, working for the African nation. But they are not. They are the African petit bourgeoisie. And it's really time for us, the Africans who are listening, that we become serious about everybody's social class and our weather position towards the national liberation of Africa. The ANC is against the national liberation of Africa. They're against the, the unification of Africa. They're an expression for OAU.
It's a settler neocolonialism, in fact, because it's not like even that the neocolonial puppets, and I don't want to characterize them just as puppets, because that sort of suggests they don't have free will.
That's right.
And they do have free will. They, they have material interest.
Who's our timekeeper? And how am I looking? I've got 55 minutes. It's not much time. What I'm going to do then is escalate. I'm going to bypass a section that I wanted to read and deal with chapter 9. I think that's the final chapter, upcoming period, what is to be done. That is on page 230. According to the index. Our six-party Congress must clearly define the road that we must pursue to advance our revolution into the future of liberation, unity, and socialism. All of our work subsequent to our fifth Congress has been designed to move us forward. In this upcoming period, we will continue the trajectory established at that historic Congress. The key to the future of our people and our revolution is the development of the African Socialist International. That is our most important aim following this Congress. Sister Carr, and where you at? Comrade Finty, all of us, the ASI, building the African Socialist International is the critical part of the work that we have to do now. Where are the sisters from Stockholm? Uhuru. Somebody's been waiting to meet you. They say, I want to hear her accent. I said, she sounds like she's from Chicago. The key to the future of our people and our revolution is the development of the African Socialist International. This is our most important aim following this Congress. Hampered by problems with communications due to lack of infrastructure development on the continent and expensive and sometimes arduous travel, the ASI is our most difficult, though our most important work. We have said over and over again that the African Revolution, when fought within the borders established for us by imperialism, has clearly run into its limitations. But when fought as one Africa, one nation, when bury all of the imperialists on the battleground of our homeland, there will be no successful Ghana, Liberia, Sudan, or other African-based revolution. We have seen over and over again that the so-called independence achieved within those borders has only served to consolidate white power in a neo-colonial black skin. It has been the so-called independence of a sector of the African petty bourgeoisie to administer the white power imperialist state on African territory. It has been the means by which white power can utilize indirect rule, thereby escaping the political cost associated with colonialism when the colonial master is easily identifiable as a foreigner and alien interloper. The ASI is the only solution for our Africa that is experiencing an escalation of the exploitation of our people and our homeland by an imperialism whose desperation increases daily during this deepening crisis caused by the world's peoples who daily challenge its historical stranglehold on our economic, on our economies, and our lives. Additionally, countries like China, India, Turkey, Brazil, and ad infinitum, which were themselves previously locked in the humiliating grip of imperial white power, are greedily and opportunistically pushing into Africa to join the feeding frenzy as a means of elevating their economic status at the expense of imperial white power and of Africa and Africans ourselves. This greater influx of imperialist economic intervention in Africa is being extolled by bourgeois economists as evidence of the growing economic vitality of Africa. Of course, in reality, this is nothing more than the impact of an intensified foreign imperialist capital invasion impacting on bourgeois economic indicators. This economic so-called vitality or growth in Africa is a reflection of the increasing numbers of foreign investors claiming African mines and minerals. It is the increased numbers of boxcar loads of diamonds and iron ore leaving the mines of Sierra Leone on ships bound for the U.S., Europe, and China. It is the renewed skyrocketing of European settlers buying our nation's property for their vacations and retirement. The economic growth and vitality they celebrate is parasitic growth and vitality. Growth and vitality that attack the economic growth and vitality of Africa and African people. With the exception of the incipient presence of the ASI, there is no meaningful political response in Africa to the plight of our people or our Africa. Locked ideologically in the past era of direct colonial domination, where it was clear that the white man was the enemy against whom all Africa must unite, the African working class and poor peasantry who have been defenseless against our class enemies within the African nation, who, even when serving their own class interests, work indirectly for the mostly white power imperialism. The African Socialist International, the African Socialist, African People's Socialist Party throughout the world, is the only organization that provides direction for the liberation and unification of Africa and the dispersed African nation under the leadership of the African working class in alliance with the poor peasantry. In Angola, Mozambique, Guinea-Bissau, Guinea-Conakry, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Zimbabwe, and other places that were seen as examples of socialist-influenced and led struggles and governments in the past, there is little pretense of such any longer. Even in South Africa, where the party in power includes partnership with a so-called communist organization, and where more than one of its contenders from the period of the liberation movement claims socialist credentials, there is absolutely no evidence of class-based struggle. There's no organization that advances the interests of the suffering African workers and peasants and the general African population. Our African people continue to be pushed into shanties, repressed as criminals, and defined as social contradictions that have to be solved for the benefit of the white-dominated status quo. The former colonial state has only been modified enough to allow participation of the African petty bourgeoisie associated with the African National Congress in administering the state instruments of repression of our people and as minor beneficiaries of the parasitic economy. Our party work among the African population in Europe, where we have active party members and organizations in several countries, has to contend with a general reluctance among Africans there to recognize the issue of class interests. We must help the people understand that how power in the hands of the African petty bourgeoisie results in one approach to our oppression and exploitation, and the independent, and this is a misprint here, control and struggle of the African working class represents another approach. African workers and militant intellectuals in Africa and Europe do not have a tradition of organizing to advance the capacity of the African working class to seize political power in its own selfish interests as a class. These are some of the difficulties that must be overcome in winning recognition of the need to build a revolutionary party that is characterized in part by its approach to national liberation that revolves around the capture of political power by the African working class and poor peasantry. These are the critical social forces that have always been used to propel the African petty bourgeoisie to power, only to suffer greater exploitation and oppression as a consequence. In Europe, where domestic African colonies are a recent phenomenon, domestic African colonies, African organizations have been mostly concerned with the politics of self-defense. Sometimes this has resulted in forms of cultural nationalism, intending to promote and defend the dignity of African culture against the inherent slander by the European nation. This is short-sightedness or opportunism by groups of Africans incapable of really understanding a return, or really considering a return to a liberated Africa under the rule of a revolutionary class. I want to repeat this, because this is important, because what we see often in Europe, every travel all over Europe, where the African colonies are recent, But Africans are slandered in the most vicious way. You know, Europe has this benign reputation where it comes to African people. I don't know how it gets that. It's, you know, as destructive as Europe has been throughout Africa, especially. But in Africa, we have Africans who have, in Europe, we have Africans who have left Europe, left Africa and gone to Europe, you know, to try and find a better way. And then they have to face the horrible slander all the time, all the time. I don't care where you are. People like to hold up the Netherlands and what are these other places that's supposed to be so benign and what is it? Sweden and all these wonderful places, et cetera, where Africans are catching hell. And some of the most brutal attacks on Africa is on the dignity of African as a people. That you, you know, to be in Berlin, Germany, and to meet with a 16-year-old African who has come from Ethiopia and who's involved in a movement, and they say that what their movement is about is to make the Germans accept them as Germans. I mean, that's what the movement is about. Of course, and that may sound peculiar, but I've been a part of a movement in this country like that for a long time to make the Americans accept us as Americans. That's what. In Europe, it's very insidious. At least in this country, we have a whole history, long periods of struggle in this country, nationalism, etc. But in Europe, you've got Africans who've been trapped there for a long period of time. And their politic represents a certain kind of cultural defense against this negativism around black people, you know, all the time. So they, in response, they you know, have developed this cultural, you know, kind of nationalism there. But they do that because they are not able and have not been able to actually assume or consider a moment in history where they don't have to be in Europe. Why the hell would anybody be in Europe on purpose? You know, even white people leave Europe. That's why they're here. nobody stay in Europe on purpose, right? So certainly, you know, you won't leave where white people are running to Africa and then you're running to Europe. But they do not consider ever there being a free, independent, prosperous Africa. So they stay in Europe and they engage in this kind of way to make it better. They're going to be in Europe forever. So they're just going to make Europeans accept us culturally and what have you. So we say that sometimes this has resulted in forms of cultural nationalism intending to promote and defend the dignity of African culture against the inherent slander by the African nation. This is short-sightedness or opportunism by a group of Africans incapable of really considering a return to a liberated Africa under the rule of a revolutionary class. This is a politic of despair by a group of Africans prepared to be in Europe forever. They are attempting to carve out enclaves of cultural security and tolerance in exchange for the presumed economic security of Europe that is attained at the expense of the well-being and security for Africans in Africa, even as Europe's security is more and more in jeopardy, isn't it? Another expression of African politics in Europe revolves around the effort to be accepted by Europeans into the European nation. Like the cultural nationalists, this struggle for European acceptance is not peculiar to Europe. It is something that has also characterized the struggle of African people within the U.S., with the exception being that cultural nationalism and assimilationism have only become the dominant politic among Africans since the defeat of the U.S. front of our movement fighting for national liberation, if not workers' rule. This assimilationist politics has never been successful. If Marcus Garvey was here, nobody was talking about the NAACP. There were only 16 people in it, and most of them was white. You know, the Communist Party USA, at the time of the Garvey movement, there was something like 50 Negroes in the Communist Party USA. People wanted real liberation. And you can't, you know, we are oppressed as a people. We are in Europe, we are in America, we are stormed throughout the world as a consequence of an attack being made on our national homeland. Anyway, preaching to the choir. Throughout South America and the Caribbean, the task of the ASR is to raise up the national and class consciousness of African people who suffer severe economic exploitation, political insecurity, and national repression. In Honduras, Colombia, and other areas of South America, lands inhabited by African people, sometimes previously conceded to us by the government, are constantly being seized or under threat of seizure by governments or government-supported corporations. South America, like most of North America, is a territory that achieved its identity by genocidal European appropriation of the land of the indigenous or Indian people. It was what Karl Marx recognized as a process of the primitive accumulation of capital that gave birth to capitalism, white power, and the European nation. For the indigenous people, it was a parasitic infection that has led to disastrous consequences being suffered and fought against up to this day. The European colonizers of South America, mostly Spaniards, fought their so-called mother country for right to sole ownership of the stolen land. These were known as fights for independence, though it was no independence for the indigenous people and the enslaved, captured Africans brought to the land to grow the European economies. In the aftermath of these struggles for independence, Africans have generally existed in a political purgatory of sorts. While we have been named for the states that were created in the lands of South America, we were never really Colombians or Ecuadorians or Brazilians, where Portuguese colonizers cleverly and maliciously appropriated for themselves the culture of enslaved Africans and renamed themselves and the enslaved Africans Brazilians. You with me on that? Those are Portuguese down there. They call themselves Brazilians because they act different from other white people in Portugal because they've appropriated African culture. And now they make Africans Brazilians and make themselves Brazilians. And of course, they do that in name, just like Negroes in America are Americans. Although, and in America, it's interesting because they say the only music that America has ever created is jazz. America didn't create no damn jazz. Jazz came from Angola, from Congo, from Sudan, just like samba, you know, and various other expressions of African culture spread around, just like James Brown. You know, for that matter. Yeah. How? Somebody tempting me. Although we are increasingly seeing Africans throughout South America beginning to identify themselves as Afro-Colombians, Venezuelans, Hondurans, etc., national identity confusion is one of the great encumbrances to the outcome, even more even more so than in the U.S. and North America, where this contradiction is also encountered. The African Socialist International is already having an impact on the politic in the African world, whether in Africa, Europe, North and South America, and the Caribbean. Our organizational, political, and ideological footprint can be found everywhere. Throughout Europe and the United Kingdom, the ASI has challenged or changed the political culture in African communities. For 30 years, we have done fierce political battles in England, ripping the fabric of pan-African and other expressions of often radical petty bourgeois political tradition. Our first big battle in England was to win the radical African community to recognize the importance of organizing to struggle as Africans. This was not only in opposition to a false national consciousness that characterized Africans as black Brits, it was also in opposition to the pan-Africanists who saw the struggles in England as support for or in solidarity with the African front of our liberation struggle. Another contending position was one that opposed African internationalism because it was seen as violating a strategy of black Asian unity that required obfuscation of African national identity. And what I mean by that is that when we first started working in England, we would meet Africans, well, you spent some time there, Brother Alex, but we would meet Africans there who said that they could not identify as Africans or because they their strategy was what they call black Asian unity. Okay, I believe in what you call black Asian unity, but you don't have Asians. What you have is Kashmiris, you know, you had Indians, you had all other kind of people with an identity, but you become black. You have to liquidate Africa in order to have that relationship with them. That's crazy. So that's unacceptable. And that was one of the struggles that we had. And over the years of party-led or involved struggles, during which we introduced the issue of reparations that has been largely embraced by most African militants, the entire political landscape that has been affected by the party. Now, the black Asian unity opponents are more African than anyone, including those of us in the party. We have also had an influence that has contributed to a materialist approach to political analysis within the general African community, our movement. Similarly, throughout Europe, the presence of the party has challenged the status quo within our movement. The African Socialist International has given the African community the ability to fight for a future of a liberated Africa. It challenges the political implications of seeing a future trapped in a hostile Europe, while Africa, a land from which many have only recently come to Europe within the last generation or two, continues to experience shameful immiseration and oppression. The ASI moves us from the position of having to fight for reforms in Europe, another way of improving European imperialism and strengthening its hold on Africa and the world. It brings us to a position of conscious combat with imperialist Europe in order that Africa might know the development and prosperity usually associated with Europe, though with greater uncertainty today. The ASI has shown that Africa can and must be free. It provides the ability for Africans to understand that our presence in Europe represents the European front of the African Revolution, not a place within which we are permanently on the defensive, attempting to hold on to our national dignity, and at the same time, we are engrossed in an unending battle to win white approval to stay in Europe. The ASI means that Africans who have been chased to Europe by conditions in Africa that were created by Europe are capable of extending the struggle for Africa's future into the heart and politics of Europe. When understood this way, African internationalism helps to deepen the crisis of parasitic imperialism, moving us closer to the day when we can defeat it, freeing Africa and Africans everywhere from its bloody grasp. We are organized in the Bahamas, in the Caribbean. Our struggle to organize throughout the region must be enhanced and guided by a plan of action that will put the party on the ground wherever there are Africans to be won to our ranks. In the Caribbean, we are also confronted with the implications of low level of class consciousness in a region of formerly enslaved Africans that won nominal independence from direct control by whites. With the ascendancy of Africans as managers of these distorted neo-colonial microstates, white power dropped from the radar, and its African stand-ins often functioned under the mantle of descendants of anti-colonial slavery heroes. The Bahamas has been a really learning experience for me and for the party. It's small enough, you see, where you can, you know, you can, you know, really see the social configuration with some kind of clarity. You can see, you know, get a grip on what's happening. And you go to the Bahamas where people were, I think, was it 1972 independence was supposed to happen? 1973 supposed to be independent. And what that has meant effectively is that the tourist industry that has simply been, you know, this place where white people come to enjoy themselves and Africans function as servants to the tourist industry, what it simply means today is that instead of the white people being up presiding over this economic venture, they have Negro managers in the form of the government. So the government has got a black face now, but the same operation exists, the same ownership of the corporations, of the tourist industry, and there are even entities there in the Bahamas that the masses of people don't even know who owns them, don't know what happens in these places. It's assumed to be CIA related and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's just a change in management. And just like in South Africa, what you have is a change in management with the white imperialist corporations and white people still owning everything. They just got a Negro face to it.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
This is Africa Live.
We have on the phone a caller.
I don't understand, how is it okay and legal to bomb people on a daily basis all over the world, to starve people, and then when some airplanes fly into some towers, a guy gets off his medicine and starts shooting up the mall or something, then the world comes to an end.
Garvey's movement was a serious challenge to imperialism, because if Africans begin to work for our own interests, then we ain't working for theirs.
In the final analysis, white feminism just becomes, I don't know, a leftist feminist tool of colonial domination. Mm.
So this discussion has to happen.
This is Africa Live.
Raising up the question of African women in a way that contributes to our liberation and unification.
ABDEP sees our nursing school as an extension of what Marcus Garvey established in the early 1920s with the Black Cross Nurses. Our nurses are being trained to not only again be nurses, but to be African internationals.
This is Africa Live.
I sympathize with these people so much that I hope that as a consequence of what has happened to them, they will be able to look at the rest of the world as humans as well. They will be able to assume that the next victim of a drone attack in Afghanistan may also have parents, may also have community people who will suffer and cry for them as well.
Uhuru, and welcome to Africa Live on the Uhuru Radio Network. Africa Live is a weekly show that brings you the best in news and analysis from the African internationalist perspective. I'm your host, Vedant Sankara. Thank you for joining us today. The 6th Congress of the African People's Socialist Party occurred from December 5th through December 11th in St. Petersburg, Florida, in 2013. Attendees and presenters came from throughout the U.S., Africa, the U.K., the Caribbean, and South America. Earlier today, we played the first hour of the chairman's opening presentation to the 6th Congress of the African People's Socialist Party. Today on Africa Live, we will continue with the second hour. Later in the show, we will have a special conversation featuring Chairman Omali Yeshitela and Secretary General Louise Kinshasa of the African Socialist International. They'll be having a private dialogue about the death of Mandela and the future of South Africa. Uhuru.
When repression sets in and crushes the revolutionary trajectory, what is left is often a caricature of revolution. Simply careerism, or happily being in the movement occupying space without an agenda for the revolutionary capture of power. The revolutionary essence has been removed or diluted to meet the legal requirements of the day. Even many would-be revolutionaries have learned to speak this new language of non-struggle, struggle, and muted revolution. This is how the movement has learned to express itself. This has become a fundamental weakness, making it difficult to recognize, respond to, and participate in genuine revolutionary politics. We of the African People's Socialist Party are confident that we know the way forward. Our organizational capacity is growing, and we are capable of answering the questions. Know the way forward. Our organizational capacity is growing, and we are capable of answering the questions confounding both the imperialist ruling class as well as the revolutionaries struggling to advance during this imperialist crisis. The 6th Congress of the African People's Socialist Party is occurring at a time that the presence of our party is sorely needed by Africans and the laboring masses of the world. It is a time when the world seems to be adrift and in turmoil, unleashed from its political, ideological, and economic moorings. The 2010 5th Congress of our party occurred under the slogan, One people, one party, one destiny. Laid a solid foundation focusing on organization and capacity building. The last Congress has guided our subsequent work to this point and gives us the confidence with which we enter our sixth Congress and this historical moment. Following the days of democratic discussions and resolutions at the Fifth Party Congress, we have temporarily brought all the party organizations and offices under the direct leadership of the Office of the Chairman through the creation of an ad hoc One People, One Party, One Destiny Committee. It is through this ad hoc committee that we have initiated a party and a movement-wide campaign under the same title that has the responsibility of creating protocols and pursuing implementation of the Congress resolutions and mandates. Today, our party is one of the fastest growing and most effective revolutionary organizations in the world. We are grounded in England, several cities in Germany, France, Sweden, and Belgium in Europe. We are actively working in West Africa, particularly in Sierra Leone, and we have growing ideological and political influences and bases in southern and eastern Africa. Party organizers are active in the Bahamas, in the Caribbean, and we are growing within the U.S. while our organizational efforts are not yet keeping up with our political and ideological influence among the Africans and others in Canada. This growth of the party will contribute to the definition of revolution during this period. For the past 20 years, following the inability of the Soviet Union to live up to its Marxist commitment to socialism, and with the Chinese communist model being hamstrung by a world capitalist economy resting on a foundation of parasitism or what Marx called primitive accumulation, it has been the frightening specter of Islam that unites many of the oppressed of the world in general opposition to imperialism. This is because the areas of the world where Islam is most concentrated are also areas of impoverished masses suffering from imperialism that since the time of the so-called Christian holy wars of the Crusades in the Middle Ages have understood and defined their oppression in religious terms. Now, through the party's presence